When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Wealthion. I'm your host, Andrew Brill. Many of you have been asking about cryptocurrency and how you can invest. We've got the answers for you coming up right now. I'd like to welcome Brett Rentmeester back. Brett is the founder of our RIA partner, Windrock Wealth Management. Brett and Windrock are the perfect guests to talk about how to invest in crypto since they've been doing it for over 10 years. Brett, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
So 10 years, Brett, crypto was in its infancy stage back then. What made you jump in? Because back then, there weren't a lot of people looking at it and saying, oh yeah, this is the thing to invest in.
No, as much as it's still the Wild West and you know, skeptical in some people's minds today, 10 years ago, it was truly a new experiment. What I'd say is, out of the great financial crisis, we became concerned that the world was on a course of unsustainable debts and printed money. And honestly, we're trying to look for things that could be a hedge against just all this money creation, knowing that over time, the more you create of something, the less value it has. And so Bitcoin came to our attention specifically, and it was interesting because it was somewhat of a hedge in the sense that it had a limited supply that was going to be created, but it was an experiment. We kind of thought of it as the people's money, something, an experimental phase of trying to launch something outside of the system. But as we got to know it better, we also understood a second component, that it was truly a disruptive technology based on blockchain that had a lot of applications beyond, you know, just what Bitcoin was at the time. And maybe best stated, some people had called it a Swiss bank account in your pocket. So it was the idea that could people, individuals directly connected to their money with no middleman, no strings attached, you know, peer-to-peer trustless system. So it was a pretty powerful idea that more people have understood over time.
Now, understanding that you can actually buy things with crypto these days. There are actually some athletes getting paid in crypto, but this is more of an equity at this point. It's not something that I've heard a lot of people say, look, you're not going to go out and buy things with this right now. Eventually, it could come to that. But do you guys look at this more of an equity at this point to grow wealth?
Well, we kind of see it as dual purpose to the point I made earlier. On one hand, at some point, this could be a hedge against a system of fiat currencies running into trouble, whether the dollar, the euro, the yen, et cetera. So it does have that characteristic. We might not be there yet. Currently, there's still a lot of speculation. It still correlates with equity markets and risk. So the second component of the investment is you're invested in a disruptive technology with a huge network effect that's growing, but it kind of goes through its natural booms and busts.
So we watch Bitcoin closely. We watch a bunch of these cryptocurrencies closely. And look, Bitcoin went up to 74,000. Now it's in the neighborhood of 62,000. When you buy, let's say, one Bitcoin and you break it up into Satoshis and or any currency, a cryptocurrency, and you break it up into smaller bits, at some point, it's going to, I guess, like the dollar, it's going to cost you either more or less to buy something because the price of that will fluctuate.
Well, that's right. You know, that's absolutely right. Although to your point about buying things with Bitcoin, I make one comment. I think it's Gresham's law that, you know, bad money drives out good money. So I can only speak for myself, but as an investor, I have Bitcoin I could spend. I have a Visa card that will convert your Bitcoin immediately on any purchase, anywhere Visa's accepted. So there are a lot of practical ways to spend it, but I ask myself, why do I want to spend it? I think it's better money. I'll spend the dollar or the yen, the euro. So I think a lot of that's going on, but I guess the key is that the infrastructure is there to make it practical and use it for transactions if we ever came to that type of juncture.
I have Bitcoin and Solana Ethereum. I have those all on my iPhone, on my stock charts. I follow them daily to see what they're doing. What do people have to know before they invest? You know, right now, Bitcoin, like I said, around 62,000. Ether, which is on the Ethereum blockchain, in the 3,000 range. Solana, around 130, 140. So that's a big range when it comes to those three. I know there's a bunch of different cryptocurrencies out there other than those three. What does someone need to know before they go and invest? Say, okay, you know what? I'm going to put a chunk of money down on this particular cryptocurrency.
Yeah. Well, let me just give one quick disclaimer as we jump into some of these names that, you know, this is not, this should not be construed as investment advice, and everybody ought to talk to their advisor. Or if they're looking for a like-minded advisor and they like this message, you know, reach out to Windrock. We'll be using some of these coins as examples, not recommendations. So let me start with Bitcoin just out of the gate and then lead to the others. I mean, I think the first thing for people to understand is Bitcoin blockchain is a revolutionary technology. It's not a fad. It's real. Just take Bitcoin, for example. The estimates are hard to get, but if I told you there was something that was able to do over 700 million transactions globally over the last 15 years, and it had no CEO, no employees, no corporation, had never been hacked. Now, individuals have been hacked, wallets and exchanges, but the Bitcoin code has never been hacked. That would seem pretty remarkable, like an ecosystem that's just flourishing on its own. And yet, you know, that's what Bitcoin has done. So that's point number one of what people should know. This is real. It's here to stay. Two, like other technologies, we're going through an adoption curve. So you can go through, you know, your innovators to your early movers to the early majority. And we're probably somewhere approaching the early majority, which you could say is where the internet was in the late 90s. But this technology is moving quicker. And third, if you look at the market capitalization or size of the market, you know, at about 2.3 trillion by some estimates, you know, the whole category would be a top five enterprise in the S&P 500. So the space is getting rather large. And then if you go beyond that, Andrew, before we get into specifics on coin, you've got some countries starting to adopt it. The basket case countries, the ones that have really suffered under hyperinflation and depreciating currencies, El Salvador being maybe the best example. But there's a lot of minefields. I mean, this is still new technology, so it's uncertain. There are a tremendous amount of fraud out there simply because people aren't knowledgeable and they're trying to reach out to others to help them navigate. And the last thing I'll just say that people should understand is there's all sorts of terminology that's complicated. It can range from NFTs to RWAs, real world assets, to DeFi, to a term called HODL, H-O-D-L, which hold on for dear life. The reason that's become a thing in crypto is because there's extreme volatility that the average investor who hasn't been in the space just isn't used to. And so when things are going great, there's this FOMO or fear of missing out. Bitcoin's going to be $1 million. And when things go down, there's this panic selling. So, you know, you wrap all this together. It's real technology. It's here to stay. But it's a complicated, fastly evolving space with a lot of danger that people just have to go in eyes wide open on.
How do you coach someone through that volatility? Obviously, people want to see their money grow. And there's going to be peaks and valleys. But it seems Bitcoin, you know, 50,000. And then it was at 14,000. And I keep using Bitcoin because it's the most popular one. So I know that there's a lot of different cryptocurrencies out there. But how do you coach someone through that volatility when they want to obviously want to have hold on to their money and watch it grow?
Yeah. I mean, part of it, Andrew, is education, what we're doing right now. It's if people understand the long-term thesis and where this is going, they're much more able to close their eyes and kind of weather a storm. That being said, I think the second piece of that is take some profits on the way. So if you had a certain amount of money, it's up 3, 4, or 5 times, take some off the table periodically when everything seems great. And that gives you a little more resilience, you know, to go through the cycle. Other than that, I think it's sizing it properly and not getting yourself so deep in it that you're panicked at every, you know, daily swing.
So what is the proper mix, if you will, between equities and bonds? You guys do this for a living. You have private equity stuff. You have all these different things at Windrock. What's the mix? Is it 1%, 2%? And does it vary by person?
Yeah, I think first of all, it absolutely varies by person because this is a high risk category. It's a category we think even more conservative people should consider a small portion in. Without putting numbers to it, let me give you what we normally tell people. Put enough in that if it went up 10x, 10 times your money, it would be meaningful to you. But not so much that if it got cut in half or more, never recovered, it would be lifestyle. So for some people, this is a play money experiment, a little bit in, let's see what happens. And for people that are more knowledgeable or maybe a higher risk tolerance, younger, longer horizon, a couple percent of a portfolio on up is, starting points for discussion for sure.
So, what are the complexities that investing in the choices in investing in crypto?
There's a couple. There's the vehicles and then there's the coins themselves. So it's if we could maybe just start with the vehicles. I'd say with the advent of the Bitcoin ETF and the SEC basically approving it, it's made it a lot easier for the average investor to just go on a Schwab account and buy it. Okay. So that is one way to do it. It's the most simplistic, but it kind of is Bitcoin centric. I'd say the other way, a couple other ways, there still are some vehicles that we refer to as closed-end funds, things that own cryptocurrency but issued a fixed number of shares, such that there are times where the price of what they own varies from the price at what you can buy it at. So a good example is Grayscale had some funds, and Bitcoin, Ethereum, some of these things were out of favor, and you could buy their fund and at one point buy Bitcoin at a 50% discount to what the fund owned. So there are still some opportunities like that today. The third would be we have an ability to go buy direct cryptocurrencies in the name of a client, specific purchases of the kind of names you mentioned. And the fourth, if people are looking for more exotic, more complex things, like I want early stage coins that are launched or NFTs and those kind of things, there are some private funds that are out there. Happy to talk about some of the coins and differences, but I'll let you take it here.
So those discounted funds, let's say someone says, "Oh, you know what? If I can get Bitcoin at half it is what right now," would they have to go through someone like Windrock
No,
or?
I mean, people can do a lot of this on their own. I mean, the honest truth is a lot of this can be done at the individual level. And I'd say, Andrew, one interesting comment is the true crypto believers want crypto to be separated from the system, right? Cryptocurrency was always meant to be this peer-to-peer trustless system where you didn't need middlemen. What's happened is Wall Street's kind of getting its tentacles around crypto and it's pulling it all back into this centralized system where, okay, you've got Bitcoin, but you don't really have control of it. It's sitting in a fund and the fund's sitting somewhere. So, that's just a dynamic that's going on as it relates to the space and how you access it.
You talked about coins and cryptocurrency. What are the different coins and what is a coin?
Well, I'd say, when the space began, it was Bitcoin. And Bitcoin is kind of a monetary experiment. And then the second major coin was Ethereum that you mentioned. And that was kind of the first look at, hey, how do we take blockchain and make it applicable to businesses and be able to do business type things, so-called smart contracts between people and things that will self-execute if certain conditions are met. And that opened up a whole new realm of how blockchain operate. And from there, we've gone down, many verticals that be beyond the scope of today. But things ranging from real life or real world asset kind of applications to decentralized finance, things that used to be done in the banks that can now be done, lending, borrowing, options that can be done in these decentralized exchanges. So, I mean, it's a pretty wide range of applications at this point. And that's part of the issue. There are at least tens of thousands of cryptocurrencies at this point, maybe more. So, and it's changing, it's evolving, it's such a dynamic ecosystem. So it requires staying on top of it. And it's hard for a lot of people to do that. And I think the risk is people kind of chase the hot thing and don't step back and have the right framework on how to approach, the space.
Which, with each different coin using its own blockchain, is there a way for these blockchains to talk to each other? Let's say I invested in Ethereum and
Right.
someone else has invested in Bitcoin, and I want to peer-to-peer purchase something from them. can these blockchains talk to each other?
Or speak to each other. Yeah. Can I
do business with that person?
That's right. Well, yeah, it's a great question. This is very analogous to a lot of technology rollouts historically. Think of cell phones. There was a time where all these little cell phone networks all over, you know, you were traveling and you had to roam because you had AT&T or Verizon, but they didn't talk to the little network in Michigan where you were driving through. So over the years, cell phone networks did exactly what you said. They found a way to connect and be interoperable. That is underway around cryptocurrency. So not perfectly, but there are technologies, there are platforms that are solving that issue. And there are ways to so-called move from one chain, bridge from one chain to another. It's not quite as seamless as it will be in the future, but I think that's the vision for the space.
And I guess at some point they'll have to come up with the exchange rate, much like we do with money right now, because look, Ethereum's at 3,000, Bitcoin's at 62,000. Obviously, one-to-one correlation is unfair to somebody. So they'd have to come up with a conversion.
That's right. Rate. Although, keep something in mind. I mean, the beauty of crypto markets is they price every second, every day, and never sleep, right? Whereas our stock market closes, you know, certain times and opens at other times, crypto is going all night long, 24/7. There's always a price. So if you were converting from, say, Bitcoin to Ethereum, there'd be an exchange rate at any second of any day, any holiday, any weekend. So, I mean, that is kind of the brilliance of the whole system.
Is now, Brett, a good time to get into crypto? You got in 10 years ago, sure. And we're looking at the prices now. It was a good time to get in, although not a lot of people thought that. Is now a good time to get in?
Yeah. Well, I mean, certainly we have to acknowledge that Bitcoin, as an example of the space, as a proxy for the space, has moved a lot, as you mentioned, right? We hit low 70-some thousand dollars recently. Last summer, we dipped down to almost 15,000. So that's a pretty good move in a short period. That being said, I mean, history is only as good as, you know, being a guide. It's not perfect. But so far, Bitcoin and the cryptos have gone through a pretty distinct kind of pattern that has revolved around Bitcoin and the so-called halving of every 4 years, the inflation rate of new Bitcoin released getting cut in half. And historically, one of the best times to be in crypto is in that 12 to 18 months, broadly speaking, following the halving. We're right at the halving, I mean, within the next week, perhaps. So by historical standards, the answer would be yes, you haven't missed it. This is still a good time. But on the other side of the token, we certainly can't ignore the big run-up that's happened. So I think with everything, there's a little caution, and maybe it's you get in waves instead of just getting all in at one juncture, and then you look for weakness. But as I said earlier with the HODL, hold on for dear life, even in bull markets in crypto, 20 to 30% corrections are not only happen, but they're common. In the stock market, if you have a stock that falls 30%, you think the story's over and it's dead. But crypto requires a little different thinking because these things are just, you know, more mainstream. So yes, we continue to be advocates of including it in portfolios. But as it gets more expensive, we're a little more cautious and a little more diligent in how we enter the market.
So with the halving event, Brett, I understand that it has to do with the number of transactions that are added to the blockchain over a given period of time. And when it reaches a certain number of transactions, they cut the production of the coin in half. As more and more people use Bitcoin, those halving events will be more frequent other than 4 years, right?
Potentially yes. Although I think of it in kind of layman's terms that whenever the halvings occur, essentially you're reducing the inflation rate, because even though there will only ever be 20 million Bitcoin, they're not all released yet. There are still some that get slowly released for the benefit of the people maintaining the system, the so-called miners. So I like to think of it as whatever's out there is out there, and you've got this small inflation rate that periodically will ratchet down and inflate less and less. And again, compare that to currencies in the world where we're going to keep printing, you know, so they're kind of, one is the inflation rate's decelerating, coming down, which should be good for value. The other, the currencies, we just keep printing and it should be more inflationary. So, you know, from a big picture perspective, that's how I look at it.
All right. So let's get back to Windrock and I come to Brett and I say, I want to buy some Bitcoin. How are you helping me through that? Or I want to buy some cryptocurrency. How are you helping me through that?
Yeah. Well, listen, I think most people come to us looking for an overall strategy, and cryptocurrencies fits, you know, a piece of that strategy. So you start with the big picture and kind of get down based on risk tolerance and a variety of other things to do cryptocurrencies have a fit? And if so, how much? And then, you know, it is about the individual. The simple solution is, sure, go buy the Bitcoin ETM at Fidelity or Schwab. That's the easy solution, but not always the best. I mean, there are ways to own it directly, which, again, I gave you the example of the hardcore crypto people want to own it directly in their own private wallet or custody. Nobody else. People can still do that, but you've got to be tech savvy and make sure you don't make a mistake or lose your password or your keys, so-called keys, or you're in trouble. So a lot of people don't feel like they're at that level. They want to be in the system, but they probably want to do something a little more than just owning the Bitcoin ETF. So that's where a typical client might own some of these funds that are trading at a discount. And if they have enough money that they want to put in the space, we might open an account where we're buying individual cryptocurrencies in their name through a third-party custodian, but held in private wallets for security for that client. So it could be, you know, that whole range of options.
I want to ask you about the ETFs. Usually when we think about an ETF, it's a fund with a bunch of different equities in there. When you talk about the Bitcoin ETF, can you explain what's in there? Because it seems like it's just Bitcoin.
It is just Bitcoin. It is just Bitcoin. And I think a lot of this, Andrew, is the result of regulators really around the world scrambling to try to keep up with this crypto innovation, right? I mean, in a perfect world, we'd all be able to trade all this stuff. Everything would be tokenized. There wouldn't be all these restrictions. But the regulators are behind the curve on all of this, and they're kind of lashing out to attack certain things. And there are a lot of fraudulent things. So don't get me wrong. There's reason to put investor protection in. But because it's been so slow, the only one that's kind of met the muster, at least in the eyes of the SEC so far, has been Bitcoin. Now, Ethereum is up for debate, and people are putting in ETF applications. So we'll see what happens there. And then you've got, you know, like I said, 10,000, 20,000, maybe 100,000 or more other tokens that could fit. So right now, I think it's right to think of those as almost private investments, things that are kind of off the radar. The SEC doesn't know exactly what to do with them. There's still kind of infighting between the SEC and the CFTC, the commodities exchanges of, well, what is a cryptocurrency? Is it this or is it that? So as long as we have that regulatory uncertainty, it's going to be a little slower than true crypto enthusiasts want to have the options you're discussing.
You think that there's a regulatory element to this? Because the beauty of crypto was supposed to be peer-to-peer with no other interference. We agree on a price. I know how much it's going to cost me in this particular coin, and I just go to you and we make a transaction. You see a regulatory role in all of this?
Well, I think the regulators do, because at the end of the day, I think that would be a great thing for humanity, that idea of, we're talking about two worlds, a centralized world and a decentralized world. I think the future of humanity, the future of freedom, a lot of things, moving more of a decentralized world. The reason we have all these centralized institutions that are hanging onto control is because in the old days, we didn't know how to trust each other doing transactions. So we needed a middleman. We needed a bank in the middle or a regulator in the middle. But this technology gives us a peer-to-peer trustless system. I don't need to know who you are, Andrew. I know that if we transact and I release Bitcoin and you receive it, the transaction's done. I mean, it's a different paradigm, but it is a very big threat to the financial system as we know it. And you know, maybe even the dollar and the euro and the yen as more people adopt this. So I think the big experiment to watch are some of these countries that are, you know, accepting Bitcoin and other things, and kind of see where that goes.
Well, you can find him at windrockwealth.com. And I know that, Brett, you have a lot of research on crypto. You've been doing this a long time, you know, since 2014, I believe you guys first dipped your toe into the crypto world. And there is a bunch of research on your website, and you can go to windrockwealth.com. And there's an actual tab that says cryptocurrency that you can click on, right?
That's right. That's right. So that's a great resource for people to not only learn a little more about us, but also cryptocurrencies from the the basic 101 version to a little more sophisticated discussions on the future.
So I think, you know, we all thank you for joining us and explain to us how do you invest in crypto. And, you know, obviously, you got to be a little bit careful and you can't just go whole hog and say, here's my life savings and put it into crypto right now, because it is a volatile asset at this point.
That's right. That's right.
Brett, thanks so much for joining us. You can find him at windrockwealth.com. And, you know, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Andrew.
That's a wrap on another discussion here on Wealthion. Thank you for joining us. If you need help being financially resilient, please head over to Wealthion.com. Sign up for a free, no obligation consultation with Brett and Windrock. And remember to follow us on social media for the latest news and information to help you invest wisely. And if you could like and subscribe to the channel, we'd greatly appreciate it. And don't forget to hit the notification bell so you can find out when we post new videos to the channel. Thanks again for watching. And until next time, stay informed, be empowered, and may your investments flourish.